Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here at WrestlingObserver.com. It is WrestleMania week, so what else can we talk about than AEW? Sure, yeah, we'll do that, AEW. As Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics returns for his quarterly appearance, chatting all about the previous quarter of AEW business. That's right, it's our AEW investors call, quarterly business review, whatever you want to call it. Brandon's here talking about January, February, and March. We go over all the big business headlines, some of the numbers that he has compiled. We look ahead to the future, all kinds of fun stuff. So join us now for an hour of fun. Myself, Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics, talking about AEW business from the first quarter of 2025. Enjoy. Well, this week's podcast coming from Exile Island, none of us welcome at WrestleMania or anywhere in between, other than I guess we're welcome probably Elks Lodges, KFCs, Kentucky Fried Chicken, and Knights of Columbus, halls, various around the places. Correct, Brandon Thurston?
Yes. KFC, I don't go to KFC. Do you go to KFC?
I don't. The last time I have been to a KFC was my father-in-law once a year likes to go there. Apparently when he used to go all the time, he used to go all the time when he was in much younger, a little bit better health, and when he was working as a state insurance commissioner. And a big guilty pleasure of his was KFC, even though he'd bring lunch from home to tell the wife, oh, I'm eating healthy.
It's a good place to assess health insurance claims, I've heard.
Yeah, a lot of places are good to talk government business and all that. But, you know, I've not been to a KFC in quite some time.
Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't either. No, I haven't been to a KFC, and I can't remember one.
What's the last fat? Are you a fast food person in general?
No, I haven't eaten meat since 2011.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Are you?
Not about it. Myself.
Have you tried the meatless things? Like
I eat them, yes.
Okay, good.
What are the meatless things?
Sorry,
what are you asking about?
I should ask what am I asking about? I'm asking about
I eat lettuce, that's meatless.
Yeah.
I eat bread, the also plant, meatless.
Plant-based meat. Those things.
The Beyond Burger and things,
yes.
Like that. Yeah, those have really improved in the last couple years.
Yeah.
Okay. They're more meat like. There is on the occasions where I accidentally eat meat, there's a bone atmosphere to meat that you're like, oh, that's meat.
A bone like atmosphere as a
It's a different experience. You can definitely tell, like. If you were to eat a real burger, I think, and a Beyond Burger, as much like meat as I think a Beyond Burger is, there's the taste of death that's in a real burger that's just not in the Beyond Burger.
Gotcha.
Not yet, anyway.
Gotcha. Yeah. Maybe if make an Undertaker version of the Beyond Burger, you start to feel that chill.
We should talk to Mark Calley, see if he'd be interested.
We should.
In sponsoring something like that.
We should.
Yeah.
We should. I'm going to disconnect.
He's probably a big vegan fan. Is he vegan?
I don't know. I don't want to assume. He is a Texan. I do not know if he's welcome. I mean, that'd be a huge reveal. I like this Q&A with Brandon Thurston, getting to know, because we talk about numbers all the time. I mean, yeah. It's good. It's good to know about diets and those type of things. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't wrestle anymore. So I've been 170 pounds since I stopped wrestling, and it's just I've been trying to eat less.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I don't weigh myself. There's no scale at home. I go to the doctor and I say, this is the only time I weigh myself. But every time I'm 170 pounds. So
yeah. Nice. Very good. Very good.
But well, even though I'm pretty short, I'm not fat, but
no.
I don't need to be 170 pounds of my height.
You don't.
Yeah.
You've always looked in great shape to me. I always assume people are, in good shape that are upright, walking around,
it's all the muscle.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Boy, this is video. The ladies would faint out over that shot you just did. A
Yeah,
double
let me put my
bicep.
shirt back on. Let me put my shirt back on.
Very good.
Okay.
So Brandon and I are here to talk physiques and plant-based meat and such, but we'll table that for now. And of course, Brandon of Wrestle Nox are here to talk, as we always do every 3 months, to talk about AEW business from the previous quarter and such. And we've gone through the numbers and such. Of course, a lot of the stuff isn't public, but it's still fun to talk about it anyway and get some insights as far
I
as.
heard that Tony was asked in an interview, perhaps in this quarter, that we're going to talk about whether he would. I would have to look at what the publication was, the outlet was that he did this interview with. He was asked maybe it was Alex Sherman, if AEW would ever become a publicly traded company, and much to my chagrin, he said no.
Oh, that's too bad.
He basically shut it down.
That's too bad. Well, he always says when the topic of ownership comes up with WBD, he always just says he reminds people that he's the controlling interest, and he makes this he calls the shots. You know, he calls
He
the
is the
shots
GM, the head of creative, the president, the owner. He is everything.
and he's also in the weeds. I don't know if you've heard that.
I've heard he's more in the weeds these days.
Yes, I've heard that. I was always told when I used to work in pro sports to not be in the weeds so much as my career progressed, because that's what people under you are supposed to be doing and training to get to where you are.
Yes, he told Alex Sherman of CNBC. What was this dated? Yeah, back in February, if he would potentially take AEW public, and he said, "quote I don't want to. I think we have a great family business, and I'm still a relatively young executive. He's in for the long haul. Someday, I'd like to have a family, and hopefully, they can work in the business. It's a family business." So he's envisioning, a Vince McMahon-like generational business here, it sounds
Sure.
like.
Hopefully, without all the inappropriate actions.
Well, yes.
I heard today Tony Khan said we're recording this on Tuesday, April 15th. Happy Tax Day, everyone.
Yes.
Especially if you're trying to evade them, you know, good luck to you.
Oh my God. If you have a small business, and if this is one of your first years in a small business, like my God, the amount of taxes I paid this year, it's just unreal.
Yeah, got to get those expenses. There's expenses recorded. Yep. I've been doing this for
Yes.
a long time. Yes.
But if you're not a profitable company like AEW probably is, you don't have any tax burden because it's all probably in the red for now.
That's right. That's right. So Tony Khan said today he hopes AEW runs after he dies. So he is
Did he say
constantly.
that?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Now
Wow.
he's not planning on dying anytime soon, but he's
Okay.
talking about those things. So you never know. He's a risk taker. You know, he took that. I think life changed for him after he took that Meltzer driver from the Young Bucks. You know, it just
Yeah.
flashed before his eyes. Flashed before his eyes. So let's get to it. We are going to talk about the Q1 2025, as we do again, talking just the business, not storylines, not anything like that. But let's see. Let's go with the big headlines. Of course, AEW held their debut show in Australia, Brisbane, Australia. Broadcast questions. This was, did I get that? Was it Brisbane or is it somewhere else?
That's correct, I
It's Brisbane,
think.
yeah.
Yeah.
I'll explain why I hesitate in that in just a minute. There's broadcast questions, of course, leading up to the event. There was a lot of confusion. A graphic went up during a show. We did not know where the show was going to air. We generally knew it wasn't going to be a pay-per-view, but we didn't know if it was going to be a Max simulcast. Was it going to be a Max exclusive? And then a graphic aired during Dynamite saying, "Oh, it's going to be on 8 p.m. Saturday, as per usual in the Collision time slot." And we went to a story on that because that was on the screen. And then it was like, "No, that's not going to be the case because TNT is actually running their NBA All-Star game coverage during that same time
That's
on the
right.
same network." And there's just a lot of questions going into this, ones that could have been, I think, easily answered. So I'm curious who the holdup was.
Why would you
However,
want to answer questions, though?
I know that is true
I
because you
hate when
get.
people ask questions.
Right. What the old Roddy Piper quote, you know, just when you think you have all the answers, then I change the questions. I think that may be the TK philosophy with this one. But it was never planned to be a TV event, or it was always planned to be a TV event, as Tony Khan said. So a lot of surprises there, a lot of curiosity and questions that could have been easily answered. However, the event, as maligned as it was going into it, a lot of grifters and such saying that it's going to be a big failure, lots of tickets available, all this stuff. Turned out to be the third largest gate in AEW history, which I believe, I don't know if we ever get an official number, was going to be
I don't think so.
somewhere more than 1.6 million, because that was, or 1.3, I believe, because that was the Toronto Forbidden Door, and then
Yes.
less than the 6 million reported that came in for All In 2 in Wembley. So somewhere in
Six
that,
million for, I've never heard that number. Six million for the second all in.
I think that's what Dave reported. Yeah.
Okay. In fairness, this was supposed to be at a stadium. but still a big arena gate. Yeah.
Yeah.
For AEW.
So yeah, it looked great on TV. There was a except there of course ring gate. How can we? I should put, you know, this big, you know, controversy about the ring, and Tony Khan can't afford to bring a ring over there. Somewhere it's on a cruiser ship or some sort of storage ship somewhere in the South Pacific, just floating around. There's this
have
ring.
We confirmed whether pirates had intervened and you know, prevented AEW? Were these WWE sponsored pirates, perhaps?
I mean, it could be a new promotion launching that stole this ship.
Could be Kevin Kelly's new promotion.
It could be, yes. Barge Championship Wrestling, yes.
Yes.
But we learned that, of course, it came after, because when you ask if you have a question, you're supposed to ask him. And it came out that, I believe through Fightful, that there was no ring that was shipped. No one forgot anything. They rented a ring, and that was it. That was the ring they had, and that they've wrestled in these 18 by 18s before, I think was the size. So that became a thing. Everyone became a ring expert and so on. But it was a question. I think one of the things that I think made it look bigger was because the mats outside were so giant.
Smaller.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Well, it looked smaller because the mats outside look so much larger, and they're also light gray. Just everything just kind of just made the ring seem visually smaller, but it's a ring they've used before, and you know, not a big deal.
I thought it was 16, but
I don't know. I think
having watched a lot of my own matches back in 16 foot rings, I look like a 16 foot ring. I don't know. who knows? It was smaller than AEW's usual ring, though.
Yeah, and of course, then they said they're returning to Australia in 2026. No details or if it was going to be in Brisbane. Again, it was supposed to run at the stadium, ran the Brisbane Entertainment Center instead. So it could be Sydney, could be somewhere else in the country, but they are coming back next year at some point. The other big headlines, maxing out. I call this one, Brandon, maxing out. Mm. Love max questions. Of course, this quarter saw the kickoff of the simulcast, the mother of all simulcasts. Mm. A catchphrase has thankfully gone away. And of course, that means Dynamite and Collision airing at the same time as TNT. Thanks to Mr. Zasloff. I think we are contractually obligated to call him that as well in a way. And there was, of course, lots of questions, as there always are. AEW reportedly, at one point, and of course, we had no numbers, and nobody does. Even Tony Khan saying he doesn't get numbers of how well AEW is doing. But they're reportedly at one point one of the top streamed live sports events on the streaming service. AEW adding more archive content to the Max library throughout this. So I believe as of now, all the pay-per-views and specials are up. And I believe all of the AEW Dynamite content through, I think 2020, I may be wrong on that, but like all of 2019 Dynamites are up. I mean, there was only like 3 months worth, but I think more stuff in 2021, but I don't believe like the CM Punk years are up there yet for Rampage or Dynamite, if I remember right.
And am I right in that the new episodes of Dynamite and Collision, like the most recent episodes, they take about a week to show up, or are they showing up more quickly than that?
They show up more quickly than that. I think the
but not right after.
No, you can get them. I have with both these, I've been either able to if I'm watch a show late, I'm able to rewind the beginning, or you are able to get them right after, because I've done that too. Where
okay.
The feed ended or I got there late, and then it but the problem is it takes a little bit of effort to try to find this stuff. It's not clean like it is on other streaming experiences like Live and immediately can go the archive. It takes a while to kind of dig through and find some stuff, but it's there. And I should add, this is always for domestic, international is Triller and then other deals and things like that. So more content's up there. There was a report that came out that Max was reducing down the amount of live sports coverage for their lower baseline tier and way to get them up. However, I asked and they said, no, it's going to be available for everyone no matter what. So that's good for them.
Yep.
The company in kind of getting in more in bed with WBD, airing 2 1-hour episodes during the NCAA basketball tournament weekend for Collision, one Saturday, one Sunday, right after the live coverage there. And then also there's reports out there, which probably they're accurate, that they're considering a multi-hour special during the NHL playoffs. So that could be coming up rather soon, because the playoffs start in just a week or so, a week or two, I believe, in the NHL. And of course, as we record on Tuesday, Wednesday in Boston, the center of everything, Brandon, AEW Dynamite is set to become the longest running primetime wrestling show in Turner sports history. I mean, I'm surprised you're not flying down here just for that.
Is it surpassing the NBA or something?
Well, primetime
Oh,
wrestling show.
wrestling show in Turner
Yes.
sports history.
Correct.
Saturday night main event. Saturday night, the WCW Saturday night.
Well, that's at 6 o'clock, not primetime.
World Championship Wrestling, Georgia Championship Wrestling. Is that all one lineage?
I mean, look, if it's going to be prime time, got to be prime time.
Okay.
8 p.m. Eastern.
It's almost prime time.
Almost prime time. Let's see what else. Collision airing live on Thursday this week of many a week. So following a trend that we're seeing, the AEW staying away from live WWE programming head to head, and something I think we could see more in the future. And let's see what else. I put it here, the Bethel Report. I don't know
The
how much
Bethel
we
Report.
get into this. There's more details on this, the most talked about topic for a week or so. Basically, a report came out of an average, an estimate of 500,000 viewers watching on Max on a weekly basis. I believe he updated that today
Yes.
of how he got there. 60 million minutes on average for the
Yes.
plus one or whatever the phrase is.
Yeah.
So essentially live plus 24 hours. And
Yes.
so this came
That
late.
averages out across a 2-hour program to at 500,000 viewers, and this is from SC Scoops, BJ Bethel. He's saying that it fluctuates 10 to 20% from week to week, but that's about what it does. That's what he's reporting.
Yeah, which is interesting because, of course, you have to separate the signal from the noise of people like, there's no way that's possible. To, of course, it's possible. To, well, how, why can't Tony Khan get these numbers? But he can, you know? And it's not like he's not the only journalist in the world to be able to get something that people don't have access to. But as we know with streaming services, it is with any show, these numbers are like guarded up, which is such an interesting thing if you're, you know, when it comes to like negotiations and things like that,
Yeah.
somebody has to know the numbers because if you're the NFL, if you're NBA, you want to know how is it performing. That way you can better understand, is this worth putting more into? Or it's kind of a fascinating time with, you know, people, as you know, talking about the WWE Netflix numbers. They have to be able to provide some sort of information at some point. Otherwise, you know, when it comes to renegotiation time, they can just someone say, well,
How do we know?
how do we do? And
And
someone,
for some context, what's Dynamite averaging? Right now, I probably have it in these KPIs that people can get on the Patreon.
that's right.
Dynamite average in terms of total viewers in Q1, 618,000 viewers. That report's saying that on Max. Now that's only on TBS, 618,000. That report is saying 500,000 on Max for Dynamite.
Right.
Didn't get into Collision. That's almost doubling their viewership if that's true.
Right.
People have pointed to this Lakers versus Mavericks game
Yes.
that TNT Sports PR put out an infographic with Luka Doncic elated because this is his old team or whatever. They must have won the game. Anyway, 2.5 million viewers, and it says at the bottom, and it's just 2.5. There's no granularity, no decimals of precision, unfortunately, but it says 2.5 million average viewers on TNT, comma, True TV, ampersand Max. And lo and behold, it did 2.058 million viewers on TNT. It did an additional 444,000 on Max. That totals 2.502 million viewers, which on the surface, you would look at that and say, well, it must have done virtually no viewers on Max. And if and it stands to reason, if a high profile NBA game is not doing major viewership or not doing 500,000 viewers or something like that on Max, then what's AEW going to do? I mean,
Yeah.
just to be transparent with my thoughts, I have no idea what to believe here.
Yeah, I don't either. And also, there's a question of what do they count as a viewer? Is it 5 minutes? Is it a full time? You know,
Well,
that
in what
there's.
he reported, he's basically reporting average minute audience, which is the kind of measurement that we're used to with traditional TV. When we say 618,000 viewers were watching on average for Dynamite throughout the Q1, I mean that is a division of watch time, essentially. That is a division of watch time by duration. It's the literally what it is in Nielsen terms is it is across the, let's say, 120 minutes of Dynamite. I know there's an overrun, but let's say 120 minute Dynamite, it's the in the average minute. We're just taking all 120 minutes and averaging them. You know, we get the minute by minute ratings in a spreadsheet, and then you just average every minute together, and you get whatever the rating is. And that is essentially what BJ Bethel is reporting in there. He's saying, here's the watch time, and I'm just dividing the watch time by the duration, and you get 500,000. So it makes sense, and that is very similar to what the kind of numbers that we talk about on a global basis with Netflix and all that. So that is pretty close to like is my answer. Now, whether or not that is what it seems to be is another question.
Sure. Yeah. So things remain to be seen on that, but that, of course, was a big topic. And
Tony, we could dwell on this. Yeah. And Tony in the most recent media call as when we're talking, basically indicated that he's not getting any of this data from WBD. WBD is giving them Nielsen data. They see Nielsen data, but they're not getting any of that data, which is not that surprising, because I think these media companies don't want to give up anything they don't have to improve your ability to negotiate favorably for yourself.
I was thinking about this the other day. It is crazy about that, because you would think if you're spending $165 to $185 million on a property, you want to give them every chance to have data, be like, this can improve. This is what we're seeing. Given all the data pocket, they want to get the most out of that investment. I understand there's the negotiation thing, but
But then I have to give it to the actors.
True. I guess. Yes. It's such a at some point, it's like, well, how am I? They're just going to sit there, arms crossed, like, nope, we're not going to tell you. Like, I can see it more with a sports property, because especially like an AEW where it's live, like an NBA game, but you're also, there's a creative aspect to it where things can change, and saying, this is what we're seeing. And this is what we're seeing for specific areas of the country and so on and so forth. Kind of like WWE and Netflix talks about all the time with, Netflix is going to help them determine what new countries to visit, right?
WWE is getting data from Netflix. I bet they had that. I don't know this, but I bet WWE and Netflix, as part of their agreement, there's some data sharing. That I would guess is a part of their agreement.
It would make sense. It's the more they know, the more they can be like, we need to adjust, because it's WWE's best interest to have that deal go well. It's in AEW's best interest to have the deal go well, but it's also for, you know, the streamers themselves, they're paying this money, you know, if there's information they think could help.
And I think in Netflix's case, maybe a reason why they do their top 10, and that's how we get the raw rating, whatever you want to call it, every week. And I think in Netflix's case, you know, they are the winner. They are the by far winner of the streaming wars. Max is not. And maybe they don't want to, you know, be as upfront with that data. Now, that being said, as I said in other places, I've heard that there is Nielsen data on entertainment streaming programs, but it's available like a month after all that stuff is released or whatever. So it may be the case that on a very delayed basis, if somebody has a Nielsen subscription and can get into the Nielsen portal, if you work in the entertainment industry or something that's using Nielsen, then maybe there are people who can get access to this data that would shed some light on what AEW is doing on Max. So if you have any of that information.
That's right. The phone lines are open.
Yeah.
Let's see. Of course, the other thing I concluded here for the big headlines, AEW leaning out its roster. We'll get this in a minute. Cutting some high-priced talents finally with guys like Malakai Black, Ricky Starks, Miro, Rey Fénix, Saraya, and a few others. But those are kind of the big ticket items. And they've been holding on some of these talents for a while. And Tony Khan said everything's on a case-by-case basis. And yeah, cutting some money there. And I look at rosters from time to time and I'm like, huh. Haven't seen this person in a while, these two in a while, this person in a while, this person in a while. And you kind of wonder, I think from a creative aspect, I think the company has got better because it's using a shorter bench and not feeling like they pull new people off the shelf and kind of just insert them in. And I wonder if some of these people that we are not seeing, if it's the phrase is Guantanamo Bay, that they are just out there isolated. I wonder if that means, you know, the Britt Baker comes to mind. We're going to talk about her more in a minute. You know, high paid, not being used, used to be a star. If it's just kind of like, we're just going to let this run out, or, you know, there's all these questions that come up and not a lot of answers with some of these big talents. I just wonder if it's a strategy now to be like, a lighter roster makes it a little bit easier for us to do things.
Yeah. I mean, I've always thought they have a way too big roster for, even though, you know, at one point they did have 5 hours of TV, but now they have four. Mm-hmm. I just think having such a big roster makes it harder for everybody to get over, because everybody's going to share time. If you're going to hire all these wrestlers, presumably you're going to use them. And then you're just fragmenting everybody's TV time in which they can get over. And right. I think the number of wrestlers that they've had has been way too much.
Which I think if you go back, for those that haven't listened, you talked to you and John Pollock talked to Jesse Collins a couple weeks ago about the AEW survey he did, and he was talking about, you know, we're talking about Boston coming up Wednesday. He's like, you know, I didn't know who was going to be on the show. And this, again, this is weeks ago. One difference between, you know, an AEW and WWE is that you generally know every week that's pretty much most of the big talents are going to be there. So if you're going into a WWE show, you're knowing, you know, depending if it's Raw or SmackDown, I'm going to see probably four out of these five people guaranteed. With AEW, you don't know that. It's not just a case of split roster. Sometimes they kind of have like people that just appear solely on these shows, but also on the show they're supposed to be on, you might not see Kenny Omega for 3 weeks, and all of a sudden you might see him in two straight weeks, or you might see Will Ospreay for five straight weeks, and he's gone. Or, you know, there's a lot of that where you don't know because just of just how they do things. They give guys a lot of time off.
Yeah, I don't know. We get into like these little reasons about why if attendance is what we're talking about there, and why attendance is down, which maybe we'll get to. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was probably an issue when attendance was much better too, right? I think, and whether or not your show is doing well in terms of attendance, in terms of TV ratings, is usually just about the star power and whether or not people want to tune in to see this. And a lot of these problems, I think, are you know, exist across time. It's just, is this product hot or not?
Yep, I would agree. Some other key developments, we'll run through this list. Some music licensing. I guess kind of canceling each other out. The Elton John Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting Song returned as AEW Collision opening theme. However, the Pointer Sisters, a song I'm sure was on your iPod Shuffle way back in the day. I'm So Excited kicked off the Dynamite simulcast to a point that I think everyone was like, what? Did something happen? Is this just a preview? Like, what's going on here? And then it was on for a few weeks as the lead-in. It felt very strange, and it just quietly disappeared. No mention of it, no nothing, and it was just gone. So I thought that was a funny thing. AEW Dynamite replays that were set to appear on True TV. I think we actually talked about this a little bit last time. And there was also a updated Archive Max content, which is more stuff coming to the streaming service. Ring of Honor. Let's celebrate 100 episodes, Brandon. Ring of Honor on Honor Club, 100 episodes. We still have no idea what the current subscriber numbers are there. It's been like, I think, at least a year since Tony.
You said 12,000 a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No TV deal. No TV deal for Ring of Honor yet.
Yeah. No movement on that. Khan said he wants to make the right deal possible, and Chris Jericho had said some things like, "Oh, he's working on it, all these things, but it just doesn't feel like it's going to happen."
Bought that company when? 2022, March 2022.
Yeah.
3 years ago.
Yep.
They're not getting a TV deal anytime soon. No Shockwave either, notably.
No Fox deal or anything like that. Ring of Honor Supercard of Honor not running during WrestleMania week. That was a surprise for a lot of people. Atlantic City in May instead. Just so he had mentioned before, you know, he kind of just did that as a tradition. And I think he kind of wanted to get out of it for a while and just not be in that shadow of everything going on. And yeah, so he's running Atlantic City in May instead. Charity-wise, Fight for the Fallen did a benefit for Asheville flood victims. That kicked off the year on the simulcast on Dynamite from Asheville. Saw the return of Adam Copeland. I almost said Edge. I should say Cope now. Yeah, that was a big change. And then all that. Philadelphia was set to host AEW Dynasty, which it did. And then Phoenix hosting Double or Nothing. Tony Khan changing tradition there, heading to Phoenix instead of Las Vegas, Nevada. Of course, WrestleMania happening there this weekend. So, well, that probably a big reason for that. And maybe just to do something different, which I think is good. They announced their spring 2025 live event schedule. One thing they have stuck to, which I'm very interested in, is for the most part, they're running music halls type things, small places, you know, 2,000, 3,000 seat venues. And it's a much different environment. It seems louder for the most part. And it seems like it's just a different look, and it fits kind of where the company is at right now. We'll get to attendance here in just a minute. So I'm going to assume that unless there's a reason to change that, they're going to continue to do that for their weekly TV.
In the smaller venues.
Yes.
I would think so.
AEW pay-per-view expanded to Amazon Prime. The man I'm talking to right now broke that story, which is good. And it's interesting. They're barely acknowledging the fact that you can buy on Triller and pay-per-view.com and YouTube. It's for the most part, it's only they will meant they the graphic they use is Amazon Prime, and but they will mention it that you can buy these other providers, which I think is so interesting, especially with Triller, because Triller is their international partner and has been for quite some time, but they're kind of just like they're not treated with the same level of respect as Prime, who just came in the door. And I don't know if they're getting a better deal or if they think that from a branding perspective, aligning with Amazon Prime is better than not.
Yeah, well, they've been with YouTube for quite some time too.
They have. AW talents continue to appear in the Indies, CMLL, New Japan, vice versa. So AW continue to be a good community partner, I guess you could say, when it comes to that, which I always find interesting. If talent gets hurt somewhere else, especially a top one, how does that affect things, and if that'll change things? So it's always kind of this fine line that they run, but they're continuing to do this and all that. They continue to also be a place for random talent to appear. JoJo Offerman, the widow of Bray Wyatt, did a ring announcing gig for them and of her dark match. Elijah, strange thing where he appeared with in a vignette with a AEW tag team or Ring of tag team, I guess the Righteous, and they signed with TNA, and it's just kind of a weird thing. Crazy Steve, who's a TNA digital champion, and also some other people just randomly will make appearances and so on. We learned a little bit more about that Shane McMahon, Tony Khan meeting. We were this close to having big financial news. And Shane McMahon, he wanted equity in the company and he wanted to run the show. That was the reports. And Tony Khan, quote
I
unquote,
can't imagine why Tony
ghosted.
Khan wouldn't go for that.
I know.
I mean, those are the two things that I think Tony Khan doesn't want to give up at all, which is equity. Although it seems he's given up some to WBD, but that's
Sure, Mr.
a way of life.
Zaslav. Yeah.
Yes, but giving up ownership and control of the show, it's like Ari Emanuel talking about like, oh my, we had to give him more stock to keep Vince. Like, no,
Yeah.
I mean he wants total control of the show, I think, and give up something to give him total control of the show? No, of course not.
Yeah. Crazy stuff. Shane McMahon is still listed under the WWE active roster, by the way. On their roster page, which is pretty
Oh,
funny.
good.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Tony Khan said the company set all-time records for Dynamite and Collision viewership. He's mentioned this a couple times. So
Yes.
the ITV promotion is doing a partnership is
John
doing really.
Williams, which is someone with ITV, is always tweeting and has tagged me a few times about how good their viewership is, but no numbers, unfortunately.
Yeah, they're the top promotion in pro top promotion top professional wrestling promotion in the UK. That's what Tony Khan has said before. He's pushing it. He's pushing it.
Yeah, their attendance. We'll see. We'll see. They did do what was their attendance for All Into, the Turnstile. So don't talk. Don't bring up the Turnstile
We're going to
now.
get to that in just a minute. Going to get that in just a minute. Quotable
What was
quotes.
the? Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Okay. Okay.
exactly. AEW and Johan Promotions announced a multi-year extension of their partnership, which I believe is all the movie theaters and so on and so forth. This is a random one I had to throw in here. Former referee, WWE referee Rhea Chatterton said she was under AEW contract for a year. She got paid to be a scout and she never did anything. I thought that was one of the more random, like weird kind of things. And I don't know if it's a case of Tony Khan wanting to be charitable. It's kind of interesting who he was charitable with. It's just very random because this person had not been involved in wrestling for forever, and it's like we're just going to pay you
Yeah.
to be a scout. I don't know. Weird.
Yeah. I mean it's a nice thing to do, especially for somebody who, allegedly had a really horrible time in the wrestling business. But did they just hire her and forget about it? I don't know.
It's strange. Very strange. Speaking of money, MJF saying he's going to make over $15 million in his current
How
AEW
many years is
contract.
this contract for?
I don't think he said when he said he didn't wasn't official, but he said when he's done with it, he'll be still very young. And he used some specific quote, but I assume it was a 5-year deal. So I mean, you
Yeah,
could assume $3 million a year.
that's believable.
Yeah. Ryan Nemeth filed a lawsuit against CM Punk, Tony Khan, and AEW. And then they are going to arbitration during this quarter. They filed to compel arbitration, which just happened in April, actually, or that deal was made or agreement rather.
Yes,
Nemeth,
yesterday that came to light,
that's true.
as of when we're recording now, yes.
Yeah, Ryan Nemeth said that the AEW countersuit, which they did, served a quote-unquote pathetic attempt to humiliate and intimidate. He also said a quote-unquote literal billionaire sent a lawsuit before his off-Broadway debut. And as you mentioned, the case, as we record this, has been moved to arbitration for Q2.
Some insight about that. Like, what is he referring to? There's a filing that shows that he was served. The AW, in response to his lawsuit in L.A. court at the state level, they responded in federal court in Florida, petitioning, saying, you can't do this. This is, you signed a contract that says all disputes have to be handled in arbitration. This shouldn't be in court. And they served Ryan Nemeth with the paperwork for that lawsuit in federal court, and apparently they found him somewhere in like Astoria off Broadway.
This is one of the few things that I the anti-AEW people have not really latched onto, like Ryan Nemeth as a totem of their hate towards AEW. It's just the way the thing was written, and I'll say he's not a sympathetic figure to the anti-AEW crowd for whatever reason. It's weird how that works.
He might have a future in podcasting, though.
He might, doesn't everyone. Demolition just started a podcast this week. Yes, Demolition. Yeah, who knows? Could be on there sometime talking ratings. Live ticketed events for the core. We had 13 Dynamites, which included 5 dual tapings with Collision. We had 9 live Collisions.
Yeah, we've got an ontological problem here. You had originally here 8 Collisions, which is technically true. Well, no, wait. Yes.
I adjusted it after I saw your note.
So is Grand Slam Australia a Collision or not?
I'm going to call it a Collision because why not?
I'm calling it a Collision because it aired on Saturday in a preempted Collision time slot.
Yeah. I would agree. Yeah. And also one pay-per-view as well. So 23 ticketed events throughout the month, or throughout the quarter, rather. So a little bit less, again, usually the first quarter. They've held true to this thing. No pay-per-views in January or February. They're sticking with this Revolution being the kickoff to their pay-per-view season. And the event was, of course, the Crypto.com Arena in downtown Los Angeles. And they drew a house of 11,670 was a report attendance. I have no gate numbers on this. I think he said they're approaching 1 million at one point, but I don't think he ever confirmed that it was 1 million. And according to Dave in the Observer newsletter, had done at one point estimated between 135,000 and 140,000 buys. So pretty successful. I was going to be, I think it was down from the previous year. And of course it would be because of Sting's retirement and so on. So that was obviously a big thing. And, you know, the attendance was down, but again, Sting's retirement was just its own, you know, its own beast altogether.
Yes. Other than All In, the last $1 million gate for AEW and somewhere in the order of reported 180,000 buys, something like that.
Let's see. Total TV broadcast, of course, they had 26 episodes, 13 Dynamites, 13 Collisions, two of those being 1 hour episodes for the NCAA coverage. Linear TV hours, I had 50. 50 linear hours for Dynamite, 26 for Dynamite, 24 for Collision. And let's transition to this PDF. As you mentioned earlier, you can get this if you're a WrestleNomics subscriber, and why wouldn't you be? $5 a month or $60 for the year, the best deal you can get right now. And let's go over some of these numbers here. I'll go right from the top. Of course, let's kick it over to you. So we'll start this with the median weekly 18 to 49 ranking. And we've talked to these before, kind of where these rank. So I'll kick it over to you for how they did.
Yes, yeah, so we have TV ratings to talk about first. And we're now into the era where you can throw your hands up plausibly and say, this doesn't matter because it's leaving out, if you believe BJ Bethel's report, this is like leaving out like 80% of the audience.
True.
I focus on ratings or rankings, where your TV show ranks among TV more broadly, because that is a strong indicator of TV value, and it sort of clears away all our cord cutting problems. Well, anyway, this is Q1. Remember that all that simulcast began on January 1st, and you've got Q1 where they ranked on a weekly basis number 84 for Dynamite, which is down from 41 of the prior year. So that seems like a big drop, but you could explain it away and say, well, look, the max viewership is really offsetting it. Collision 142, which is down from the year prior. Well, no, that is down from the year prior, 126. So who knows what that means? And you've got the demo for Dynamite down a pretty strong, 39% from the year prior, even though sequentially, since the simulcast began, it's not like we saw an immediate evidence of cannibalization. In January, it's not like we saw, oh my God, it's way down from December already. You didn't see any of that. But on a year-over-year basis, in Q4, something really happened in the traditional TV viewership, because that's all it was, right? At that point, there were some really serious declines. I think, really from in the second half of the year of last year, but down 39% in the demo, down only 2% with Collision. So there's kind of a positive story here in Collision. Collision's ratings holding up better, down 24% for Dynamite, and total viewership down 8% for Collision. Collision, and that's all excluding. That is excluding the stronger preemption, where they had strong viewership coming out of sports telecasts.
Yeah, so the
Which, yeah,
NCAA.
some people, it's very unfair that I exclude those, but I do exclude them to apply an even standard across all wrestling programs. If you're not airing in the normal time slot, you don't get included in my averages, including the averages that are in these KPIs. If you did, this rating would be higher. It's true.
It's true. Interesting. Yeah, Collision is okay, again, mentioned the max viewership, but yeah, Collision really hasn't experienced that similar drop, which is kind of fascinating. You'd think they'd be fairly even with that, even though Dynamite generally is the more watched show.
Yes.
Let's
Are we
go.
continuing here? Am
Yes,
I
let's go
continuing
to
the slides?
yeah, let's go to attendance. Yeah.
Attendance is down. Dynamite is down 2,700 from 4,100. Collision is up because of Grand Slam Australia. They're at 3,500 versus 3,000 prior year. And pay-per-view app is the pay-per-view. The one pay-per-view is down from the Sting pay-per-view. The meaningful, if you're thinking about popularity, how much engagement and how much zeitgeist is going on around AEW, I think the Dynamite number tells you, although they did have a good business result in Australia, that helps bring that Collision number up, as we're counting it a Collision.
Yep, that's a good point. Yep. So yeah, down, boy, it's more than half Dynamite at average attendance from 2 years ago. That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. Yeah. So then let's see. What else do we have here? We have the pay-per-view buys, as we mentioned before. But yeah, so really kind of one to work with. So yeah, really kind of looking at, Dynasty, where that ends up. I think we have some prelim numbers there, and of course how Double or Nothing does. And I'm fascinated by Double or Nothing. We'll talk about that next time we speak, because Double or Nothing, I have this weird feeling it's going to feel like a lame duck show because of all the interest paid to All In, which is 7 weeks later. And I because there's been so much talk about that Double or Nothing, which was one of their four, tentpole pay-per-views when things
Yeah,
really got
it was the
going.
first show ever, right?
Yeah. And it doesn't, at this point, and there's still plenty of time to go, it doesn't feel like it doesn't really have that kind of like looking forward to it. It feels like All In is the one that people are really kind of focusing on.
Yes, which is fine, I think. I mean, All In is clearly the show that they've positioned as, I wouldn't say far above the others in terms of how WrestleMania is far above the WWE's shows, but it is definitely their biggest show annually now.
Right. All right. We'll go to some returns. Kenny Omega. They had a nice run of returns and important ones. Kenny Omega, obviously one of their top guys. Samoa Joe returned. Rush with an asterisk because Rush returned and then he disappeared again. Bandido returned. The Guns, asterisk, they returned and then they disappeared, which the way they left makes me, I wonder if they're a quietly asked for their release team. They returned after a long time. Former champions got a title shot, pretty much got squashed, and then disappeared. And there's been no mention of them at all, which I find highly suspect. I think Rush maybe just due to visa issues, even though his brother's around, or just Rush issues. But the Guns one really kind of sticks out to me. And then Hologram, I don't believe they're marketing mask yet. I'm not sure if they are, but he made his return as well. So trying to capture that Mexican Latino market, of course, in
Yes.
Bandido as well.
Yes.
Injuries slash other Buddy Matthews hurting that ring, that indie ring, Brandon. Can't believe it.
Yes.
Brian,
Yes.
were you about to say something?
No,
Okay.
he got injured in the what he said there was something wrong with the ring, and he did something to his knee, I think.
Yeah, he
Right.
jumped in and I think it looked like he hurt his ankle or something. He made it through the match, which is good. We haven't seen him though. Brian Cage is back training, even though he apparently blew out his knee or got hurt. Darby Allin on Mount Everest training. So we'll see if we see him again. Hopefully we will. And then Chris Hero.
Which I didn't know. It's not like a one day event. You don't climb Mount Everest in a day. That's like
No.
a multiple week event.
Yes. Training. Yeah, there's a ton of training you have to do and climb these smaller mountains beforehand. And he talked about having how he did it quicker than a lot of other people and just kind of rushed through it. And yeah, in March, basically, he had to kind of start this final preparations. But I think it's right around now. He's going, they have not mentioned this on TV. They have not mentioned a like it's crazy. If he does this, that's a pretty big deal, but they have not mentioned it. I don't think there's any way to kind of follow it. So I don't know if that's by his request. I don't know if it's just I'm really not sure about that. And then I
How
mean
many
if you
people have how many people have climbed Mount Everest?
I think I looked
340 people have died climbing Mount Everest.
Yes. Yeah. It is a I think
7,269 according to Google.
yeah, not a lot. Not a lot of people considering how long that mountain's been around, which I think is probably all
Yeah.
time. And Chris Daniels retired thanks to Hangman Page. I'm sure he's still in the backstage role, of course, but yeah, he retired from his limited in-ring
Yeah.
competition. We had some signings.
Yeah.
The Von
Darby
Erich
Allin
brought.
has a 5% chance of dying on climbing Mount Everest. There's another stat for you.
I mean, there you go. We should include that in percentages next time.
Yes.
Let's see. Signings and re-signings. The Von Erich brothers apparently re-signed or signed. They appear like 3 times a year and disappear back to Hawaii. Megan Bain, and we still don't know if she was under contract, what kind of contract she was under, but she is now full All Elite, we believe. Bobby Cruz, ring announcer, re-signed his deal. Speedball Mike Bailey, free agent from TNA, signed. Mina Shirakawa, who has done some work with AEW before, she, I think, is basically in paying. She's finished wrapping up with Stardom and will be in AEW full time. Kevin Knight is on a apparently a co signs has a deal with AEW and New Japan as well, but he is officially All Elite. Jeff Jarrett said at the beginning of the year he's going to finish his in-ring career with AEW, signed a 1 year in-ring deal. And after his angle with MJF kind of just went astray in terms of no one giving a shit, he's disappeared. So he could appear. I think he's going to be on. I think he's going to be the wild card to challenge Hangman Page on Wednesday. That's my guess. If not, then I have no idea when we'll see him again because there's really no reason. And reportedly, another TNA free agent, Josh Alexander, has reportedly signed. We have not seen him yet. Who knows?
Yeah, is Jeff Jarrett still working in live events for AEW?
I think he is. I don't know if he's. It's interesting because they hired him. I don't know if he reports to Koshe Irby,
I
because
haven't
Koshe.
seen him on any of the emails that I get in public records requests sometimes, but that's
Interesting.
only a few events.
I wonder if he's been kind of transitioned out of that role. So yeah, I don't. I know when he was on Wrestling Observer Radio with Dave and Garrett last year. And they were just kind of trying to ask him about that. He was very vague. Like he didn't really kind of want to talk about it, which I thought was interesting.
Okay.
Exits from the company, saving the stockholders some money. Tony Khan, WBD. Malakai Black, Ricky Starks, Miro, Ray Phoenix, Saraya, Zack Knight, Maria Kanellis, and Layla Hirsch, all exiting the company. So I expect more people by next time we talk to have exited as well, their contracts running out or something along those lines. Just too many people and all that. We'll flip to quotable quotes. Jeff Jarrett, I love tribalism, said no one
Who
ever.
doesn't?
I know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I didn't know he said this until I read this these notes here.
Yeah, he just it's
Or
he,
in what context did he say that?
on his podcast. I think I don't have the full write up here, but yeah, just the he kind of just loves that back and forth type thing, and I think maybe his definition of tribalism is a lot different than anyone that spends any time on social media when tribalism is just the absolute worst thing. Tony Khan said releases on a case by case basis. Tony Khan stands by all in ticket sales. Brandon, he said, it's not lost on me what goes on out there. I assume meaning on social media when it comes to the discourse around claiming that he sold in the 70,000 or 70,000-ish mark for that first All In. He was he's a starch defender. He said, I got a plaque from Live Nation. You know, he pointed to a plaque they had, and yeah, he's sticking by it.
I'm okay. he's brought this up a few times lately, I've noticed. He brought it up at the end of a media call, I think two media calls ago.
I think it's the Revolution media call and then the press conference after.
Oh, did he?
I think that's when he brought up again, which I think is always interesting with people that show up at the press conference.
And by the way, this is not the all-in 2024 number we're talking about, that he's talking about.
Right.
It's the all-in 2023 number.
Right.
Now, let's be very clear about what the numbers are and what these numbers are referring to. The number from all-in 2023, they announced a paid attendance, which I take to be the same thing as ticket sales, of what, 81,035. No one is disputing that. No one is disputing that the number of tickets that they sold is 81,035. The Borough of Brent provided a turnstile count, a scan count, the number of tickets used that were recorded as used. Perhaps there were more people there who just didn't have their tickets recorded as used, of, what was it, 72,265? And I felt a responsibility to report that. And I didn't say that this is the realer number, but that it's... this is the number of tickets used that they had recorded. Now, I did ask Tony ahead of All In 2023 on a media call if he would provide the ticket audit, the ticket report that would show a record of you know, all the data going into ticket sales. That would be very helpful in substantiating what I figured ahead of time would be an inevitable controversy around this record-setting event, and there'd be people who would question it and try to undermine it. And it'll have all the comparison points to WrestleMania 3 or WrestleMania 32 in 2016. So it'd be very helpful to have that. He responded by talking about, he asked, what would WWE do in a situation like this? He just sort of had a joke about it. but I think that would be very helpful to have that and to substantiate that. I don't doubt that there's 81,035 tickets sold, but, you know, we want another party to substantiate that. And that's different from saying, you know, there's ticket sales, there's tickets distributed, which would be even greater than 81,035. And then there's the number of tickets used, which is always less than the number of tickets distributed, at least, and often less than the number of tickets sold.
Yeah. And every team does this, the sports team, because I've worked in this, does it differently, where, yeah, you have your distributed and you have your paid and you have your comps and everything is... everything has to be broken down because there's an audit. There's a public, not public, but there's a record there. That way, you know, do they know revenue comes from this, from this? And it's a good way when you look at your comps. If you're like, oh, we're selling out every night, it's good to know what your comps are, your comp usage rate, just to see, are these more tickets that we can sell? And also, teams announce sellouts. Sometimes there could be like 10 single seats left. They're still calling it a sellout. There's a certain gray area that a lot of teams do where they'll say, it's a sellout. Every single seat may not be sold, but 99.5% are sold. You're like, I feel comfortable saying it's a sellout. So it's
right. A sellout is like, you know, is there ever anything as a 100% absolute sellout?
No.
If we were selling like 100 tickets, maybe, but in venues where you're selling tens of thousands of tickets, especially,
right,
and you've got complex configurations and stages and so forth where tickets are opening up, you know, seats are opening up at the last minute. He kind of suggested on the one media call, like WWE had a hand in getting that number out. And I can tell you that, at least in my reporting of both years, it's a public record with the Borough of Brent.
Mm. Sounds like a great wrestling name, the Borough of Brent.
Brent Council.
Yes.
Our friends at Brent Council provided us with the turnstile count that I assume they needed for security reasons. And AEW has had an opportunity to provide a comment, which they almost never do, but they had an opportunity to provide a comment in both cases of those reports and chose not to. Hmm.
Tony Khan said they do hold production meetings, and he found some of the discourse around that amusing, said to consider the source. And he also said that AEW has been a proven consistent winner as the cable industry changes. Quotable quotes. PR Corner, I added this one in, some gaffes and such. Action Bronson say he never got called back by AEW after working Grand Slam a couple years ago. Quote unquote, backstage is weird over there. I included Britt Baker in here because people are like, where is she? And there's no answers. Jimmy Jacobs left the company, had to address quote unquote misconceptions and lies about his AEW role. Say he could return to the company someday. And it was just kind of a thing of, there was all this chatter out there that could have been just simply simply just answered very easily, and it wasn't. Bear Boulder, fired from the company, followed a domestic battery arrest. Camille, star, one of the stars of Queen of the Ring, the movie based on the life of Mildred Burke, had no comment on her AEW status amid her absence from TV. She was on the red carpet for the event, along with Tony Storm and others, and they're paid by AEW, but one is being used and one is not. Tony Khan commented on her absence and hinted at a possible return. She has not returned. You would think of the movie coming out, it would have been a nice way to bring her back for an angle or something like that. But I think she may have wrestled like two matches and it's just like disappeared on Guantanamo Bay, as they say.
Yeah. One thing that was interesting about the Bear Bronson story, which is a terrible story, but one interesting business note that you could get out of it is that in one of these documents related to his arrest, he disclosed his annual income, which was, I believe, around $80,000. So it gives you some sense of, you know, what people on the lower end are making in AEW who are under contract.
Yep. Let's see. Rob Van Dam saying he would rather be associated with WWE than AEW. That was interesting and kind of the blowback from that. And then also,
he got blowback for that?
Oh, just a little. Okay. And also, you know, you bring these celebrities in to your shows, give them comp tickets. You have this promotion for Queen of the Ring and give them a live mic. And then sometimes they say things. And this Queen of the Ring actress made a comment about an innocuous comment. She didn't really mean anything by it, saying how people know finishes. The wrestlers know the finishes before everyone. Said that in front of the live crowd and got some groans. And she got roasted on social. She had to apologize for making that comment on live mic at AEW Revolution. So even when you try to do the right thing, sometimes it turns out to be the wrong thing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I get how most people don't know that wouldn't be a good thing to do, but I also, you know, you're breaking the suspension of disbelief.
Yeah. I wonder when these celebrities, these comedians that show up at Raw to do something similar, you know, Bert Kreischer, you know, some of these people that are showing up on a weekly basis. I guess we'll see with Tony Kinchcliffe. Maybe he'll expose the business for good. Who knows?
I'm afraid he's going to expose quite a few things.
Yes. IP, Brody King filed for the Hounds of Hell trademark. Buddy Matthews filed for Hellhounds, competing trademarks. And then AEW filed for Captain Insano trademark ahead of a potential Paul White return that we're still waiting for. He had said over a year ago he would love to be on that Australia card. He was not on that Australia card. And I don't know if he's in the witness protection program or what.
Is he still under contract with AEW?
I think he is. He's still tweeting about it. So it might be one of those cases of we're done, the Mark Henry role. You know what I mean? Just kind of slowly usher him out and we'll see.
Oh, he's been around AEW for a long time.
Yes. Yeah. I remember I was on a walk and I got that news. And I had to get back here and write up a story for it. Yeah, it was one of those kind of weird things. Like, wow, Paul White's coming to AEW.
He's done a lot of commentary for AEW Darks.
Yes, Dark.
He had that match with QT Marshall.
Yep.
On the most bought AEW pay per view of all time.
That's true. Yep. Big star. Yeah,
made to the ring.
Yeah, he's just disappeared completely. Big questions for next quarter, April, May, and June. We're halfway through April now. To me, some questions. Will the small venue strategy keep on keeping on? Are they going to keep doing these smaller venues? And I think they probably should. Any more roster churn? Again, I think there's going to be some other names that are probably let go or not let go because Tony Khan doesn't like to do that. But contracts are not picked up and so on. So I think that's something to watch. The pay-per-view performance for Dynasty and also Double or Nothing. There's no June pay-per-view for the first time in 3 years. Good Forbidden Door is happening in August instead. And then also All In, the road to All In with ticket sales and the general buzz. Right now, I don't know what WrestleTix last count was. I think
mine
ran 14,000 or so. But essentially, you know, they've moved up the show to 2:00, which I'm sure in July is going to be nice and comfy. And
13,663 is last count.
Got it. And we're starting to get some sort of, you know, idea of what the card could be and all that. But it's going to be an afternoon show in nice, warm Arlington, Texas. So, I mean, the expectations are there because of what they did for Wembley, but this is going to be...
Is this advanced at this point? This is a show that's almost exactly 3 months away still. Yeah. 13,663. Is that a good number?
I mean, I think if you're in a arena, it is. It's a great number because that means you're probably close to selling out.
It's going to sell out if it's an arena, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But I think if... I think I think the tough thing is they're going to be competing with the perception of All In from Wembley, where even when it was down from year two, it was still a hugely healthy crowd to the point that they should have announced it. They should have announced the attendance and not been scared of any blowback just because less than, I don't know, I can't remember if it was 60,000 or something like that for year two, but it was up there. I mean, it had again, $6 million gate, and I think that should be something to be proud of, but they didn't announce that. So I think you're competing as kind of the ghost of that. And I'm interested to see what their stadium shows do from here. Clearly, Australia thing did not work for a
Well, do
stadium.
they do another stadium show in the foreseeable future after this?
Yeah, so they're bringing All In back to Wembley in, I think, 2026. I remember them saying
Okay.
that.
Okay.
So I
Def
mean,
definitely that's the venue.
yes, I think he yes, he said that.
Okay.
I think he said that,
Okay.
yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, there's no they have run stadium shows essentially every year at Queens in Arthur Ashe Stadium, technically a stadium
A
show.
small stadium,
Yeah.
yeah.
So
I mean, this
yeah.
Globe Life Field's a baseball stadium, so where the Rangers play. 40,300 is the baseball capacity, so it's going to be a lot lower than that for wrestling. But let's say this was completely packed at this point. I would say like 30,000. They could probably at least put 30,000 in here.
Yeah. I think if you're getting to 20, that's probably pretty good at this point. It's possible. Again, it's travel. There are a lot of questions about the economy and all this stuff and money. So I don't know.
It'll still grow quite a bit through 3 months still.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say so. Something to watch. Any other notes from you on the quarter that was or the quarter that will be?
What is the state of AEW's popularity, and is it a concern at all?
I don't know. I think if you look at the numbers clearly, they're trending down. There's the big question of Max, but I think the fact they're running smaller shows and having a better atmosphere kind of, and I'm interested to see what happens when I'm going tomorrow night to MGM. It's a great venue to see concerts in. I'm curious how it's going to be for wrestling. I want to see kind of what that atmosphere feels like, 'cause I've seen them in the Garden. I've seen them at the Aganis Arena, and now I'm going to see them here. So I'm interested what the feeling is like. And yeah, I is there a concern? I look at things like free agents, you look at attendance, but like, are people still interested in coming? I think the guys on the rise, the Kevin Knights and things like that, yes. But then this report came out overnight from Wrestling
Yeah.
Observer from the radio that talked about Mariah May signed a 2-year deal. She was elevated up. And she's
Yeah.
essentially, it's, I don't
I
say it's a,
think that the flow of talent tells you a lot
it
about,
does, it does. But it's, and at some point, and I've said this before, WB's, I mean, they probably have too many people as it is now. And there's going to be this thing of how many spots are there? Because they have 6 hours a week right now. They're soon going to be down to five. I don't think she's going to NXT. I mean, they're, and as I mentioned, the people that they've let go. The AEW is Malachi Black. He's on his way back. Ricky Starks got signed. Miro on his way back. Ray Phoenix signed. Everyone expects Saraya to be signed. There's only so many spots you keep bringing people in without letting people go. I'm interested to see how that works. At some point, it's a harmonious place because everything's going great, but still people are like, why are we? I assume there's going to be some talents that are like, when am I going to get my chance? So I wonder if there's, again, that opportunity to be that oasis away from, not getting opportunity. So it's fascinating. I think that one definitely surprised me. If Mariah May does sign there, because it's also a cautionary tale of when you're bringing people in, what are their motivations? Are they looking to get to WWE using it as a stepping stone? You don't want to be in that spot. You want to be a place where people want to be. And Mercedes Moné's deal is up in a year. I think she signed a 3-year deal, so
And
that'll
she
be
said she's
fast.
going already. She said she's going back,
Right.
right?
Yes. I think that before she even signed, she's like, I can see myself back there someday. I mean, those are things that you have to fight against, or else you're always going to be seen as like, the little brother, like, that's nice. And I'm interested to see how that plays out.
I think the state of the business in general, we're in this post Vince McMahon, we're settling into this post Vince McMahon regularity, where a large part of AEW's business opportunity was enabled by WWE being a bad product
Yeah.
and providing a much wanted alternative. Now WWE's not a bad product. Now I can hear him already listening, right? Yeah, there's a lot of AEW fans who are very pro AEW, who dislike WWE. But I mean, look at WWE's attendance and look at its, well, maybe not its TV ratings. That's a murkier story, but look at its attendance and they're continuing to go up and up. And WWE's embraced by a lot more fans and satisfying, I think, a need that AEW was previously needed for. And I think that doesn't mean that AEW is going to go away in the foreseeable future. There's this 3 to 4 year deal that they're on now through 28 or 29. And I tend to think that I think there's room for a viable number two wrestling company.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that it's, you know, that the sort of the state that they're in is the state that they're going to be in for the foreseeable future. And I think they're going to become even a clearer number two over time, especially I think as the flow of talent will show, you know, people sort of graduating on to from AEW to WWE.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, Mariah May is one, Ricky Starks is another, and I think there'll be more to come.
Yeah. It's interesting with, like, you know, Stephanie Pucker did that interview, or Shawn Michaels didn't even talk about this, but essentially she got a bigger offer from AEW and they said, you should take that if it's paying you more money. That's the offer. And then she's like, well, I kind of really want to sign here. So she took less to sign with WWE because it was her dream. It's just this is the dream. So it's, it's just very.
And what it was before is like, yeah, that's by far the biggest company, but look at the product. I know I'm going to be dissatisfied there. I could go to AEW where I know I'm going to be, I'm with the hot rising product and I know I'm going to be more creatively satisfied there. At least I have good reason to think so.
Right.
And that's not as much of a distinction anymore, if at all.
Yeah. Yep. And it's interesting. Dave brought up the point. He's like, I can hear older wrestlers saying, you're getting offered more money at this place and you're signing with a place that's offering you less money because it's your dream. Like, he's like, it's crazy because you can hear people. It's like, I can hear the old timers saying that of just like, you're not signing for the highest
back
money.
In my day,
what are you doing? Yeah.
The marks used to be on the other side of the guardrail.
That's right, brother. That's right, brother. There are no marks at WrestleNomics, only marks on attendance and money and the good stuff. You can sign up for WrestleNomics, $5 a month on Patreon, also available on Substack as well. And you get detailed insight into the workings of the business workings, numbers and all that, weekly basis, viewership ratings and such, without bias, I will say. It's very straightforward.
Really?
Yeah, I would say so. I would say so. I'll go out on a limb.
Without bias.
Yeah, I feel no bias. You have new graphics?
There's a completely new format to my...
Yes.
I don't know if to call them daily or weekly, because they happen 5 days, five times a week for what is it? Raw, SmackDown, Collision, Dynamite, NXT.
Mm-hmm.
And we do the ratings report and then also attendance data, if there is attendance data, some YouTube data, and some cage match data too, if you want to see what the cage match ratings were for the event and the matches. And I've redone it. There's interactive charts now. It's new and exciting and even more professional than before. And it is completely standardized. It's literally just a computer program that generates this. And there's no commentary. I do type in what the ranking was.
Oh,
but that's
how,
it.
How could you? You just revealed everything.
I type in what the ranking is. I have to. You can tell. It's a human being typing it.
Yeah, but
there's no AI here.
I mean, clearly you're thinking while you're typing, though. You know,
and thinking lends itself to bias.
Yeah, I mean, always. But yeah, I find it. It's very straightforward. It allows the reader to say, these are the numbers, and what do I think? Instead of saying, what does the internet think? This is
right.
Allows you to think.
I'm trying to put the data in a sense that, like, it tells you the answers to the questions that I think you're thinking about in terms of popularity, in terms of TV ratings and things like that. Because TV ratings can be so confusing and people can use them to manipulate whatever conclusion they want.
Certainly can. Yes. All right. We obviously, WrestleNomics on Substack, WrestleNomics on Patreon. And what else? Anything else to plug? Pollock and Thurston every Wednesday on available free on Post Wrestling and WrestleNomics. Anything else?
No, we're covering Raw on Netflix. Those ratings too. I just did a report while we were doing this podcast. Could you tell?
Oh, I couldn't. I couldn't. Okay.
Okay. That's how unbiased and mechanical it is.
Exactly. Good stuff. Good stuff. A preview of Pollock and Thurston on Wednesday. What are you guys talking about this week?
I got an email from John Pollock earlier today,
Oh boy.
with all the things we're gonna talk about WrestleMania week. The show will already be recorded by the time anybody probably listens to this. But we're gonna talk about Paul Levesque's interview with Andrew Schulz. We're gonna talk about WWE's coverage from they got some great coverage from Sports Business Journal. We'll have an update on Ryan Nemeth and his lawsuits, and a few more things, some UFC related things as well.
Oh, good stuff. Good stuff. No slowdown there. And yeah, we'll plan to talk to you again in another 3 months' time. It'll be hot, summertime, and yeah, we'll be off the races and talk about all kinds of other stuff. Brandon, thanks so much as always. All right, big thanks to Brandon Thurston for stopping by, and thanks you for listening. If you are thanks you. I say that a lot. Thanks to you for listening. And let's see what else. If you want to hear more from me, and why wouldn't you? I hosted this past Sunday's Wrestling Observer Live, about 38 minutes or so. And yeah, I talked about a little kind of WrestleMania preview, what I was thinking about going into the week, stuff that's still pertinent today, including my questions on where's The Rock? And so on, new Ring of Honor Pure title, Mariah May, all kinds of stuff. So if you want to get more of me, you can check that out for free at WrestlingObserver.com. Or just like this show, you can listen to it for free, every single episode, on the Wrestling Observer Spotify or Apple Podcast account. Just type that in the search. And if you haven't already, you can pull it up and listen to that and other free shows that we have, as well as our subscriptions on that feed as well. Those only cost $10 a month. For Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And yeah, very well worth it. So again, thank you all for listening. And until next time, insert catchphrase here.